Oh, that's right. It's a continuation of the I Love Ann show. And I have Congressman Trey Gowdy on the line with us. How you doing today, Trey?
I'm doing well. How are you? And happy 4th to you and all your listeners.
Oh, same to you. Are you at home in South Carolina?
Yes, ma'am, I am. This is our July 4th recess, and it comes at a perfect time. We have folks we need to visit with and plants we need to tour and schools that we need to prepare to write graduation commencement addresses for, so this is a good time to be home.
Absolutely. Well, it's great that it's cooled down a little bit, that is for sure.
You know what? It could be 120, and it'd still be better to be in South Carolina. So you're right. It is cool. My wife makes me walk with her at night. I shouldn't say that. I get to walk with my wife at night, and it is a little cooler.
How's your hair hanging when you're walking?
How's my what?
Your hair. How's your hair hanging when you're walking?
I usually have it under a hat so nobody can see it.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I've commenced on a study to see if I can figure out if your hair tells your mood when you're in some of these negotiations or these when you're talking to some of these people. I'm trying to figure out if there's a message that I can find in your hairstyle.
I think the message is this. The only two I really like are super short and super long. So you better pick one and stick with it, because if you try to go from one to the other, it's going to take a long time.
Yeah, that is so true. But you've been having some interesting times going on with your investigations up there. Benghazi looks like it could be closing in on some of the things that Secretary of State Clinton has said. What can you tell us about what you know?
Well, we're making good progress in our Benghazi investigation, and a lot of it is still totally unconnected to her and behind the scenes. I mean, we continue to interview witnesses, and I mean, I do understand the fact that if it's not in the news and it's not being discussed and people don't see it on television, that they don't always know you're doing it. But the real work of finding the witnesses and talking to the folks who were on the ground is being done. It's just being done behind closed doors. Now, the reason that Secretary Clinton has been so prominent lately is because she had a really unusual email arrangement with herself. And it impacts us to the extent that we need the emails and the documents that relate to Libya, but that's a really small part of her tenure as Secretary of State.
Right.
The broader issue is whether or not the public record is complete from her time as Secretary of State, and I think what we found out last week is we know it's not fully complete because we found some emails that she didn't turn over.
So, but in the end, Trey, what is the end goal, Trey? Because, I mean, you are uncovering oodles of information, and this transparent administration obviously is not transparent. But what will be the end when you discover what will happen?
Well, the end for me is to have talked to everyone that can that can shed light on, you know, the before, during, and after in Benghazi. And to have as many records as we can possibly have. And I used to say all the records, but it's patently clear to me that this administration is never going to give us all the records. So I can't wait 30 years until someone decides to give me the last batch of documents I'm entitled to. You owe it to the families and to the people that you work for and your fellow citizens to get it done in as timely fashion as you can. So my goal is to write a report that answers the questions, that debunks the myths. If there are myths out there about what happened before, during, and after Benghazi, is to provide information to my fellow citizens. And they can draw whatever conclusions they want to draw from our report. Some will like it, some won't. But that's true with everything. My job is to tell the truth and to find the facts and then kind of let it settle where it settles. That's my job. Now, 2016 politics is not part of my job.
Well, they say otherwise now, Trey. The media is saying otherwise.
Well, of course they are. And that's because the Democrats are saying otherwise.
Okay.
But I want you to, I mean, keep this in mind. We would not be talking about Hillary Clinton this morning if she had not had this email arrangement that she had. She's one witness out of 100 that we would talk to in Benghazi. She's important. She was the Secretary of State. But there are other important witnesses. I mean, we're not talking about Mike Morrell this morning, and we're not talking about Leon Panetta this morning, and we're not talking about Susan Rice this morning because they didn't have this unique email arrangement with themselves. So I can't talk to Secretary Clinton. She says she's only coming one time. That's what she said.
Right.
Okay. Well, then that one time better be productive for both of us, which means I need your emails. And every time the emails come out, we learn a little something new. We learned that she at least took a lot of emails from a guy named Sidney Blumenthal.
Unsolicited, she says.
She and I have very different definitions of the word unsolicited, but yes, she says unsolicited.
And so, as you progress on this, isn't there even some talk that she had some correspondence with President Obama?
Well, there's no question she had.
During the Benghazi.
Right. There's a. I think from what I've been told, it was a 15-minute conversation, and executive privilege has been evoked. You and I, think back to Fast and Furious. Whenever executive privilege is invoked, it's going to be years and years and years before a court litigates that. And I will just tell you, and I won't be there years and years and years from now, so you can't wait that long to try to tell your fellow citizens as much as you can. I don't have time to go to court and litigate their failure to turn over documents or their invocation of executive privilege. At some point, your listeners and all of my fellow citizens are going to have to be able to conclude for themselves. If this were really great news, they wouldn't be fighting so hard not to turn it over.
And so in the entree, not to be insensitive here, does what Secretary Clinton says, what difference does it make? Is there going to be the only conclusion that we can get out of this is knowing the actual facts of what happened? It's not going to go to the Attorney General. There's not going to be anything. It's just going to be, this is the facts as we know them, and this is what happened.
Well, as you know, the Attorney General works for the president. That's the executive branch, and
yep,
the legislative branch. Whether it's Lois Lerner, whether it's the GSA guy that I read about this week, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, the legislative branch doesn't mete out punishment. We investigate, we control appropriations, we control appointments. There are lots of things the framers allow us to do, but to investigate the allegation, and I'm not saying this about Secretary Clinton, I'm just saying in general, to investigate the allegation of criminal wrongdoing, to prosecute criminal wrongdoing, to sentence criminal wrongdoing, the legislative branch has nothing to do with that. So when I go on, and I don't go on Facebook very often, but one of my colleagues in Utah asked me to go on and look at something on her Facebook page, and there were just a number of posters who said, and to a member of Congress, when are you going to prosecute? When are you going to put this person in jail? And you want to grab your head and say, look, I get your frustration, but you're asking the wrong people. Members of Congress don't have that power any more than your state legislator has the power to investigate a homicide case. I mean, you would never think to ask your state senator, when are you going to investigate and prosecute someone? You would ask your district attorney.
Correct.
So at the end of it, all we can do is say, we investigated, this is what happened. And our framers, our founding fathers, gave us the ultimate of all punishments, and it happens every 4 years. You get to go cast your ballot based on what direction you want the country to head in and what expectations you have for the executive branch. But you know, I'm Republican, and I don't pretend to know the politics of any of your listeners, but you can't lose national elections and then complain about not having control over the executive branch. You got to figure out how to win national elections.
Well, that is so true. And I just think that, one of the things that is the problem with all of us, we want instantaneous answers and we want instantaneous things done. And you've been working on this, for what, a year now, hasn't it?
Over a year, but it seems longer.
Yeah. And it just seems that as we watch Hillary Clinton heading towards the nomination for the Democratic Party, it just seems like it's water off her back. So keep going.
Well, here's what I would say about that, and not just with respect to Benghazi, but there, there may be a lot of reasons that you would have a different political ideation from Secretary Clinton. The objective at that point is to persuade or convince your fellow citizens that your vision for the country is right and her vision for the country is not. I mean I've had this conversation with my father who is 75 years old and has watched what he believes to be our country head in a very, very different direction from the one that he grew up in and what he wanted it to go. So you got a couple options. You can sit there and lament it and complain about it, or you can get out there and persuade your fellow citizens that you actually have a better vision. But what you can't do is lose 5 out of the last 6 popular votes for president and then talk about not having control of the executive branch. Those two things go hand in hand. I was not a big fan of our last attorney general, as you probably picked up on.
Right.
The best way to be a fan of the next attorney general is to pick the next attorney general. You only get to do that if you win. Foreign policy. Tommy Cotton's one of my better friends in Congress. Tommy Cotton and a whole host of other senators and the rest of us, too, are really, really concerned about the negotiations going on with Iran. You know the way to control that? Figure out how to win the White House. So meanwhile, we got 20 candidates running around, for the most part, taking shots at one another.
Right.
And the other side has really a single candidate. And then we sit there and try to figure out why we can't win. Maybe that's why.
Well, I think, don't you think that it has a lot to do with the perception with the media? You know, it's like Fox was reporting that there were the emails did have things to do with Benghazi that were just released from Blumenthal. CNN, just because I happened to see it on CNN, said that, and I sort of quote, that they mainly had to do with personal things. They didn't really have much to do with anything else. I mean, just that very little difference there is so unbelievable.
I would say two things to that, and I never, ever thought that I would be in a position of saying something nice about the New York Times, but it was a New York Times reporter who broke the Hillary Clinton email story. And there is no entity less aligned with the Republican Party than the New York Times. But here's the broader point. You remember a guy named Ronald Reagan?
Yep.
They didn't like him either. You remember? And back in those days, you only got your news from CBS, NBC, and ABC. There was no internet. There was no talk radio. There was no ability to go inform yourself. People sat in front of the television from 6 to 6:30 at night, and somebody read them the news. And it was never good for Republicans. And yet Reagan broke through. It is so much easier for us to break through now than it was for him. We can go straight to people with their smartphones and their email, and there are a million more options available to us than Ronald Reagan ever had. So has the media changed? No. But the definition of the media has changed, and you and I, with Facebook and Twitter, and I'm not much into Snapchat and Instagram. I don't know if you are, but I'm not much into that. But there are lots of ways we can connect with people. So if we don't get our message out, it's nobody's fault but our own.
That is so true. Now, moving on, though, because the next thing that I really wanted to talk a little bit is this hacking of the personnel files. I saw an interview that had been posted on YouTube where you were describing the exact words, like what does immediately mean and things like that. But what about the effect that this can have on our national security, not so much for the person that works in the offices, but for the person that worked for the CIA or the State Department. What about how that is going to affect? I don't hear a lot of conversation about that, Trey.
Well, this is the next chapter in warfare, and every single day there is some entity or some country that is trying to access the information of our citizens and our government. That is true every single day. And you talk to the guys that are on House Intel or the people who are briefed on this on a regular basis, that is their big fear, cyber warfare. So Congress we have tried to take steps, but you and I both know the bad guys are usually two steps ahead of the good guys. They are figuring out how to get around whatever you've come up with, and then we're playing catch up. So what's the takeaway from those set of hearings that Jason Chaffetz had? Same thing that we take away from almost every congressional hearing. Despite the enormous amount of money we spend on technology and security ware and software, rarely does the American people get its money's worth. Rarely. And secondarily, when bad things happen, nobody is to blame. Nobody. That's the takeaway from the OPM data breach. Nobody was to blame. I mean, they can sit there with a straight face, and they can blame it on anything and everything other than people, which means that there's no one to go to for consequences. And if there are no consequences, what is the disincentive for it to happen again?
Sounds like it is going to happen again.
Well, we better, I tell you, you know, South Carolina suffered its own data breach, of course, a couple of years ago. And the companies, you know, whether it's Target, whether it's credit card companies, every single day. I mean, you stop and think of how much of your banking and your life really is conducted online. And again, no matter how well-intentioned government is, even if it were functioning perfectly, which it doesn't and won't, but if it were, the crooks, and I watched this in my previous job, they put a lot of energy into being crooks.
Well, they've got the time also.
They've got the time, and they just have the criminal inclination. So we have got to be incredibly vigilant, both with our personal information, but also with our national security information.
Well, I would think that we would really be guarding that of our operatives out there, because their lives are in really big jeopardy. And if it is China, all they have to do is sit back and continue to watch who's meeting who, what's happening. They don't have to do anything.
And you would think that would come up from time to time when our leaders meet with the Chinese leaders. You would think that would be a pretty significant condition precedent to having a trade relationship or really any kind of relationship with a country. Quit trying to hack into our stuff. Quit trying to adversely impact our citizens. I hope at some level those conversations are going on, because anybody that would try to hack in and steal your people's personal identifying information is not an ally, they're not a friend, and they don't have your best interest in mind.
And yet we don't seem to be able to control it, Trey.
The best way to control it is to stop it, and or for the consequences to be such that you know, if it's a rogue criminal enterprise, that's tougher to deal with because that's not a country.
Right.
I think we may find out some of these actually are affiliated with countries.
That's what my understanding is, that we do have some that are affiliated. So so as you interrogate, we still can't. And I don't understand why we don't have the best and the brightest constantly changing up the system on this to help protect it. I mean, there are companies out there who are so vigilant and it costs them a lot of money, but they're constantly changing all their safeguards to help keep them safe.
Right, and you mentioned the best and the brightest, and the way that our system is set up, and fortunately so, the best and the brightest, I mean, we have a private sector-driven economy
right.
that you know, the government needs top drawer, you know, software security or internet security, we go to whoever the leading private sector firm is.
Correct.
Which is why that hearing that we had was so unusual. There's a requirement that you notify your private vendor when you have a data breach. But OPM didn't do that.
Right.
So you can have the best and the brightest, but if they don't know there's a problem, how are they going to be able to help you? That was what was so frustrating, is you have to report it immediately. And it wasn't reported, and it sure as heck wasn't immediately.
So what is your takeaway? You know, I remember when you first went to Congress, you had a lot of enthusiasm for the fact that things were going to be better. Now that you've been there, this is, let's see, 2010, 2011, what, 4 years, 5 years now?
How are you? It seems longer, but I think it's been a little over 4 years.
4 years. How are you really feeling about things, Trey?
Well, and I have to temper what I say with the acknowledgement that we still live in the greatest country on earth. And I would rather have our problems than have anyone else's problems.
Okay.
So I have to say that so I don't get depressed. But people do not trust or have confidence in the institutions of government. I was, I don't think she'd mind me telling you this, I was texting last night with Greta Van Susteren, who is a very fair person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know her politics. She's just fair. And we were talking about how little room for fairness there seems to be in politics. There was a video that the Clinton folks put out yesterday about, partly about me and also partly about the Benghazi committee. And it was everything you hate about politics.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay. I mean, we would never do that. You would be laughed out of court if you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Laughed out of court. You can't pick part of a question and then edit part of an answer. I mean, you can't do that in court. So, you know, I get why people have checked out. They're frustrated. They say, what difference, you know, does it make if I get involved? We're going to get the same thing. So my answer is for people to have incredibly high expectations of the people that they put in public office. I'll give you an example. I am incredibly biased towards a guy named Tim Scott. I just am.
I've noticed.
Okay. All right. Tim and I do not agree on every issue. I don't require him to be right on every issue. I require him to be a good person, to be honest, and to have what he believes to be our state and country's best interest in mind with every vote he casts. And if he does that, I'm willing to accept the fact that, you know, I would have pushed the other button. I would have gone the other way on that one. Because we don't require people to be perfect in any facet of life.
Correct.
Thank the Lord. We don't. But you do require them to be honest, and you do require them to not be corrupt. And so my fear is that people that you want to go into politics are not going to go into politics, and the people that you want monitoring and staying engaged and active on the issues are just going to say, well, what's the use? I've got a life to live. I got a family to raise. I got a job. The greatest threat to me is not Chinese hackers. It's not even a nuclear Iran. It is the fact that so many of my fellow citizens have so little regard for the people that are in leadership positions. So the people in leadership positions need to change, and we as a people, and very, very soon, I'll be right there with you, just as a regular old person, we need to have super high expectations for the people we put in public office. And I don't mean that. I mean, if I had somebody that voted right 80% of the time, but they were honest and they reflected well on my state and they researched the issue, I'd say, praise the Lord, I'm going to keep that person.
But how do you feel, you know, I think that working in that situation could really begin to wear you down, Trey.
Well, no, it does. There's no question about that. That's part of what I was discussing with Greta last night, is how different it is. She was a courtroom lawyer before, and I was too. And I know everybody hates lawyers. I get that. But there are rules in a courtroom, and there's a referee, and there's a jury, and that jury is fair, and none of that exists in politics. None of it.
And it ends. It has a finite end, doesn't it?
It does. You get feedback from a jury, and you know whether or not you did a good job or not, and then you move on to the next case. But you can't throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. You can't make accusations that have absolutely no basis in fact. You can't say, well, I read some blog on the internet that said X, Y, and Z. You'd be laughed out of court.
Sure.
I mean, to try to use something someone said on a blog as evidence, you'd be laughed out of court. So for those of us that, you know, grew up in a system with rules and a referee and a jury and fairness and facts, no, this is a very different, difficult line of work.
Absolutely.
Which is one reason I think our framers didn't intend for us to do it forever.
Ah, I see. Well, you know, I think it has to be a very frustrating job, and even as a talker sometimes I want to check out because I get so frustrated listening to all this and seeing no results. But I guess that time will tell. If you've got time for one last question, the Supreme Court and that blind justice, I remember you telling me one time about the blindfold and the lady holding the scales and everything.
Yes,
real
ma'am.
Quick, synopsis, where is our court system at?
Our court system is about as far away from where our founding fathers could have imagined it. They thought the Supreme Court would be too weak. I want you to reflect on that for a minute. Alexander Hamilton worried that the judicial branch would be too weak. And what we have now, by a 5-4 decision, which means one person out of 300-plus million can decide, and I've got this in quotes, even though I'm on the radio,
okay,
liberty rights that don't exist in the text, don't exist in the history, the spirit of the Constitution. So, you know, if you want to run for Senate or the House and be part of policy decisions, then that's what you ought to do. If you want to say, you know what, I'm not going to be involved in policy, I'm going to be involved in determining whether or not something is legal. Not whether I like it, not whether or not I would do it, but whether it is legal. And the notion, just take one of those Supreme Court cases, the notion that the way we have defined marriage, not as a country, but go back thousands of years, the way that we have defined marriage, one person in a 5-4 decision gets to decide that he's discovered some new liberty right. And what's amazing to me, Ann, is in the process of discovering that liberty right, you know what essentially he's saying? I'm going to deprive you of the ultimate liberty right, which is to decide for yourself how to define marriage. I'm going to cast this as liberty, but the reality is I have so little regard for the democratic process that I'm going to decide this myself, even though I've never been elected to anything other than the Supreme Court, and frankly, I was the third choice when that came around, because Bork and Ginsburg got done away with, then you had to settle for me. Now, that is not the way the framers had it set up.
Correct. So our Supreme Court is now an executive branch?
It's a super legislature.
Super legislature.
No, they did it in Roper versus Simmons with the death penalty. You know, there are really good arguments that you should not put people under the age of 18 to death at the time they commit a crime. There are lots of arguments. I've heard them.
Right.
Lots of good arguments. So go to the floor of your state Senate or go to the floor of your state House and make those arguments. But that's not what Kennedy did in that case. Kennedy went and looked at Europe and said, well, Europe doesn't do it. We shouldn't either. Well, I'll tell you what, Justice Kennedy, why don't you resign your judicial post and go run for the House or the Senate and then make the argument? But to tell me that after 200 years of Eighth Amendment jurisprudence, you can find the number 18 in that amendment, no one else has found it. So he confuses what he thinks the law ought to be with what the people think the law ought to be. But guess who put him on the bench?
Who put him on the bench?
Ronald Reagan. We don't even get it right when it is our turn to pick. You look at some of the more, I'm not saying Kennedy is one of the more liberal, He's not liberal compared to Brennan. He's probably not liberal compared to John Paul Stevens. He's not liberal compared to Souter. I mean, look, he was the third choice, and that's what you get when you get your third choice. But Republicans put all of those folks on the Supreme Court. Can you think of a single time Democrats ever were surprised when one of their judicial picks turned out to be more conservative than they thought? No, they never get it wrong. I just gave you four examples of Republican picks that surely surprised us.
Well, it's definitely interesting times that we live in. That
and I'd rather live here than anywhere in the world, Ann.
Even
on the days that don't seem good.
But I guess all I can say is you've got to keep up the good fight, and maybe you're right. Maybe people will wake up and decide to look at the candidates as in toto rather than just that's the one with the good hair day.
Well, I'm trying to think who's got good hair. You can rule out Trump. You know what we probably ought to do? Maybe we ought to pick Tim Scott, because he has never had a bad hair day, ever. Not since I've known
him. He doesn't have much there, Trey.
He doesn't have any. That's how he doesn't have bad hair days.
Well, you know, I don't think he's running this time, is he?
No, he's not. He's one of the very few that isn't.
Well, it's a pretty big field. It's going to be very interesting to see how it shakes out here, isn't it?
Yeah, I quit counting at 200. I can't count that high.
Yeah, right.
You know, hopefully people will appreciate the debate, and then the field will begin to sort itself out. And, you know, South Carolina will certainly have a role in that. But, you know, as we've seen in the past, winning South Carolina is not always the same as winning Iowa and Colorado and Michigan, and you have to win Florida, and you have to win Virginia. North Carolina, we've lost in the last couple of cycles, so it's we have to find what I tell my dad is when you get tired enough of losing national elections, you'll come around to my way of thinking, which is it doesn't matter how good your policies are if you can't get elected. And recently, we've had a tough time getting elected.
Well, and then there's always Bernie Sanders out there who had 10,000 people at a rally last night. That's more than Hillary Clinton.
It is. It'll be interesting to watch how that plays out. I suspect I know how it's going to play out, but they've got two, and we've got 22.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Listen, Congressman Trey Gowdy, I know I kept you over, but I sure appreciate you taking the time with us this morning.
Yes, ma'am. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish a happy 4th to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you so much, Trey. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.